This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Sixth Mishnah, and most of the Siddurim, it's Mishnah Vav. Perek Vav. Sixth Perek, the sixth Mishnah. If somebody will announce some pages, then we'll find it by the pages. 5-2-8 in the beer and bone. Sorry, and? And 2-8-1. Two, but that's the beginning of the sixth Perek, right? But Mishnah 6, Mishnah Vav, 2-8. 280 in the Tfilat Tolke. Last week, you'll remember, we discussed the strange dynamics of the relationship that is expressed in a Rashi in Vayera, where Rashi says on Ki Yedativ, that's in chapter 18, verse 19, Shehamechave, he says that the Torah uses the word Yediyo as a Loshun Chibu, the word Yediyo, which means knowing, as a word to express endearment and love. Shehamechavev etsa odom, because one who loves a person, mekarvoi etzloi, brings him near to one, veyoidoi, and gets to know him, umakiroi, and recognizes him. We said that normally it's thought of the other way around, that only after one gets to know somebody does one get to sense of knowledge and learning. When we talk about yediyo as the ultimate in learning, yediyo is that clarity of knowledge where there's no single word which is redundant, where there's no single letter, no statement which is redundant, where one understands the place of every single concept and every single word and letter. That's yediyo, and one can explain it to somebody else. As the Vilna Gaon says, yediyo is the ultimate, where you can explain to anybody the meaning and the necessity of any word, of any letter. That, we've always thought, brings one to love the material. And it comes out that it's the opposite. It comes out shehamechavev odom, that when one is, feels endeared to somebody, one brings him near, and then does one take the trouble to really get to know him. So what we're saying is that the care and the thoughtfulness and the investment of time and effort involved in yediyo, in getting to know something or getting to know somebody, will only come about as a result of a pre-existing emotional relationship. That unless one loves the material that one is studying, one will never get to the level of yediyo. One will never get to the level of really knowing it. One will never invest the time and the care to really know the person or to really know the subject matter, unless one cares, unless one really loves it, unless one has some kind of emotional relationship with it. And so we hit a problem. We've always said, start learning, start getting involved with the person. The love comes later. It's not quite so simple. There's a certain love that has to come first. And how do we achieve it? And so we said last week that we'll try and work it out also from the love relationship that exists between a man and a woman. Since the Torah chooses to use the word yediyo, which is an intellectual concept, as a loshon chibuv, which is an emotional concept, and that same word is used in the physical relationship between Adam and Chava, that Adam was yodea, his wife. So we decided that we could learn the one from the other. And we said that in the case of a husband and wife relationship, love has to develop very fast. A Torah relationship between a prospective husband and wife doesn't go through the stages of courtship that it does in a secular society. And therefore, virtually two strangers before the chuppah have to become lovers right after the chuppah. So what magic happens under the chuppah to bring this about? And we said that what happens under the chuppah is kiddushin. There are a few names for kiddushin, for chuppah. For the kiddushin, there's kiddushin itself, there's lekicho, there's the investment in the wife, there is the kiddushin, the setting aside of the wife as something special for oneself, and then there is the kinyan that takes place as well, the act of acquisition. And it's these three that we examine: firstly, the investment; secondly, the sanctification; and thirdly, what is the kinyan? Can one make a kinyan in Torah? Can one be koine Torah? Can one make Torah one's own so as to give one the emotional relationship which one needs in order to give it the attention and the care that it needs in order to understand it properly? And we said, yes, there is such a thing as a kinyan Torah. There is such a thing as being koine Torah, as making Torah your own. And in fact, that's required. That's part of what Torah is all about. Not just studying it as something external, but integrating it and internalizing it to the point where it becomes yours. And that applies not only to Torah in the long term and generally, but to every little thing of Torah that one happens to learn. One can learn it in two ways. One can learn it like one acquires secular knowledge. That's where you sit passively and you listen and you absorb a piece of information. And you can be koine Torah. Koine Torah means you've made it yours. It's become part of you. And just as when you purchase an investment, that investment affects your estate. You become worth more. So when you are koine a piece of Torah, when you are koine, when you acquire some Torah knowledge, even if it's only one Torah fact, that should make you bigger. And if that doesn't make you bigger, you haven't been koine yet. You don't get bigger just from quantitatively knowing something today that you didn't know yesterday. You get bigger from having acquired something that you didn't acquire yesterday. But the acquisition of Torah is a long and a difficult process. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. How does one acquire? And knowing this mechanism of acquisition, you will find that you will be able to apply it to all forms of knowledge. Anything which is meaningful, any form of knowledge which is meaningful, even if it's not formally Torah, but if it's true and meaningful, can be categorized as part of Torah. And one can apply the same systems of being koine, of actually acquiring that information and that understanding, so as to change one completely. So we're going to go through these 48 kinyonim. If you look in your Sidurim, we're told, Gadola Torah yoseh min ha-kuhuno. Torah is greater than kuhuno. Sha-kuhuno nikneis be'etzim v'arbo does yoseh ma'loseh. Be'etzim v'arbo ma'loseh, does it say? Because kuhuna is acquired with 24 steps. There's sort of 24 procedures one has to go through to actually acquire kuhuna. And the Torah is, you've probably got Malchus as well there. Let me just, let me use one of your siddurim, at least for the first part, because that's where the main differences are. Malchus is acquired with 30 degrees. By kuhuna nikneis be'esrim ba'arbo, and kuhuna with 24. By Torah nikneis ba'arbo yimishmoyne dvorim, and the Torah is purchased with 48. There is a version here which in fact I think is a more accurate one, where the word nikneis is omitted in the cases of kuhuna and malchus. Kuhuna being the priestlyhood and the malchus being royalty. The word nikneis is omitted there because not anybody can be koine kuhuna and not anybody can be koine malchus. You have to be born into it. You have to be born a kohen and you have to be born into the house of David. So it's not accurate to use the word nikneis. But Torah is nikneis. Torah can be acquired by anybody who cares to apply themselves to these 48 attitudes. Anybody who will learn any piece of Torah with these 48 attitudes can acquire that Torah, can change him, he can become a Ben Torah. He can become a Torah human being by the way he learns. Now I'll go back to my text, to my version. Where there's a difference, just shout and we'll see what the difference is. Ve'in lohem, these are they. Now we're going to go through the 48. We won't have time to go into all of the 48 deeply, but we'll go into some of them deeply and the others we'll go through superficially. First one is Talmud, which means learning. The second one is Shmias Ha'ozen, which means listening. The third one is Arichas Vosayim, which means talking, pronouncing. And the fourth one is Binas Halev, which is the application of the heart, the understanding of the heart. Let's take those to start with. Firstly, it looks as if the order is a little bit wrong, doesn't it? Surely the Talmud learning comes after Shmias Ha'ozen. Surely you first have to hear before you can learn? It should be Shmias Ha'ozen, and then at least, if not even later, but at least after Shmias Ha'ozen, Talmud should come. Well, Talmud means learning. How can you learn until you've heard? So surely it should be Shmias Ha'ozen. The first step is to listen, and the second step is to learn. No, so Talmud is first. What does Talmud mean? We see therefore from the apparently incorrect order that we don't understand what Talmud means. The word Talmud comes from the word Lamed. What does the word Lamed mean? Or the same root for to teach and to learn. It's an amazing thing in Hebrew that the word to teach and to learn is the same word. It's just a different grammatical form. It's just a causative and a receptive form. Lamed is the kal, and Lamed is a causative form, to cause somebody to learn. and to learn. The same word, they're not two separate words, to learn and to teach. Talmud is the dynamics of learning which is created between Talmid, between one who is Loimed and one who is Melamed, between one who is learning and one who is teaching. Talmud is not learning from books. The word Talmud is specifically the learning that takes place between student and teacher. It's oral learning. That's why we call the oral law, the Gemara, we call the Talmud. That's the learning. But it's the oral law learning. The word Talmud means learning orally, which implies, first and foremost, the choice of the teacher. And that comes first, before anything else. The very first step, the very first of the kinyonim, even before Shmiat HaOizer, you haven't yet heard a shiur of his. So how are you going to be, how does Talmud apply? You haven't heard anything yet. You haven't read anything yet. You're starting off your first day in Torah. And what's the first step? Talmud. Make yourself a Talmud. Make yourself a pupil. Make yourself a disciple. Which means choose for yourself a teacher. On what basis? The first thing that has to be understood, that on whatever basis one chooses a teacher, that basis can be changed. You can choose for yourself a teacher on Sunday, and on Monday you can change your mind. But you can't start learning before you've chosen a teacher. So it's a bit of a vicious circle. The first thing is to choose a teacher. If you made the wrong choice, you change. But you can't say, well, I'll start learning and I'll choose a teacher later. That you can't do, because you'll never start learning. The first condition, or a precondition for learning, is Talmud. That is learning. And the first step of the learning is the choosing for yourself a teacher. You choose, and then you start learning. If you find that your learning is not what you want it to be, you change your choice, you choose another teacher. But at all stages in your learning, you've got to be a Talmud learning with Talmud, learning in a teacher-student relationship. On what basis is the choice originally made? I think there are probably a couple of guidelines that one can give as far as the choice of a teacher is concerned. The one is reputation. You've got to find out what his reputation is, where he had his Torah from, let's make that the second one. The first is reputation. In the Torah world, how is he held? That's the first thing that one has to find out. How is he held in the Torah world? Number two, by authenticity. Where did he receive his Torah? Did he receive his Torah from reliable sources? Number three, perhaps the most important, well, I suppose equally important, the three probably go together, and I think these are the only three that one needs to look for, is Midas. But it has to be a person who has a degree of humility, who will ask himself if he's not sure, who will check up, who will refer you to somebody else if he feels that it needs to be done. It's got to be somebody who has a degree of Midas, who has a degree of character. Those three, one can't go wrong. So what's the worst that can happen is that you'll choose somebody and you'll find that it's not your cup of tea, it's not your style, so you'll change. That you're not going to be taught anything which is destructive. At worst, you'll find that you're not thriving, that you could be doing better, and that calls for a change. That you won't be taught in any way which is destructive. If any of those three are missing, you're going to be taught destructively. If the reputation of the person is not what it should be, then you're going to be taught destructively. When we're talking about reputation, we're not talking about reputation in the street. We're talking about reputation among the Gedolei Yisrael. That's all among the Torah leaders of Yisrael. So if you need to know, you write to one of the leaders of the Torah world, or to several of the leaders of the Torah world, and you ask, what is the reputation of so-and-so? Is it okay if I study with him? Number two, if he is authentic, you won't be taught distractively. You know that what you are being taught is what he learnt. So you know, A, that his reputation is okay, B, that the people he learned from are great, and that together with the third, with the Midas, which is going to involve integrity, he's not going to lie to you and he's not going to cheat you. That means what he's going to pass over to you is what he in fact received himself. So you know you're getting Torah as it was passed to him, so it's being passed on to you. And you know that what you're going to be taught is going to be reliable, it's going to be straight, it's going to be correct, it's not going to be in any way destructive. Later on you might decide to change, but at least the learning process can then start. The Talmud can start. What is the next step? The next step is Shmias HaOizen. After you've got the Talmud, so you've now chosen a teacher, comes Shmias HaOizen, you've got to listen. But as in all these 48 Berachim, each one of these 48 things is terribly active. There's nothing in these 48 Kinyonim which is a sort of a passive thing that can be taken for granted. Each one requires a great deal of effort. Talmud requires a great deal of effort. To choose yourself a teacher and to sit by his feet requires a great deal of effort on behalf of the potential Talmud. Shmiyach Ta'ozen, one would think, well, that's obvious now, you've chosen yourself a Rebbe, and you go and you sit in the shiur and you listen. So what does Shmiyach Ta'ozen mean? Of course you're going to be, of course you're going to hear. No, Shmiyach Ta'ozen is, as we discussed when we were doing the Vilna Gaon in the afternoons, indiscriminate listening. And this is where we come to the very big differences between Torah education and other forms of education. Other forms of education teach you to be discriminate in your integration of what you're learning. Right? Be critical. Don't accept everything. That's how we're taught. And we're happy if we're taught that way already. Where we're taught indiscriminate acceptance, we're upset. And at least if the child is taught at school or at university to be discriminate and to be discerning and to be able to reject what needs to be rejected and to accept what needs to be accepted. Is that there? Then we tend to be happy. In Torah, it doesn't work like that. Because who is least qualified to be discriminate? You'll see later on, yes, one has to be discriminate, but for other reasons. In terms of really discerning the truth or untruth of what you're being taught, who is the least qualified person to practice that discrimination? The student. There is nobody less qualified than the student to do it. So what's the good of teaching him to be discriminating? And if you do teach him to be discriminating, on what basis is he likely to discriminate? On the basis of knowledge, he can't, because he doesn't have the knowledge. That's why he's learning. So the only basis on which he may discriminate is on his basis of his prejudices. He'll discriminate. What he likes to hear, he'll accept. What he doesn't like to hear, he won't accept, which will preclude any form of growth and progress. Because one progresses from what one doesn't like to hear. You don't progress from what you like to hear. From what you like to hear, you know already. You don't grow that way. When you hear something shocking, when you hear something that shakes you a little bit, when you hear something that stretches your imagination a little bit, that opens new avenues to you, that's when you grow. And those are the very things that the discerning mind will reject, because they're new, because they're different, and because he's not able comfortably to face them. And so, as we discussed when we were doing the Vilna Gaon, the discernment and the discrimination has to come in the choice of what you read, in the choice of what you learn. So where we prefer to practice the discrimination is in what you read, in who you're learning from. Once you've chosen your teacher, whether your teacher is Shakespeare, or your teacher is Newton, or your teacher is Einstein, or Lahavdil, your teacher is the Rambam, or your teacher is the Shulchan Aruch, or your teacher is Ravina or Ravashi. Once you've chosen your teacher, who are you to decide what you will accept from them and what you won't accept from them? You've chosen them because they are the experts in the field you want to learn. So where's the discrimination? What kind of discrimination is it right for you to exercise? If in fact you've chosen them as the experts in their field, then you can't have discrimination. Your discrimination is in who you learn from. If he's not worthy of teaching you, don't waste your time with him. If what he's saying is not likely to be good and wholesome and true and correct, don't waste your time with him. We'll discuss some other day. Sometimes one has to be able to learn from people who one can only learn in part from. There is such a thing. Sometimes one doesn't accept somebody as a teacher, but still you pick things up from them. Life is like that. You don't have to learn or accept blindly everything you see in the street, but still you can walk around with your eyes open and you can learn certain things. That's something else. But here we're talking where you're sitting down to make a study of something or a study from somebody. Once you've decided that this is your professor, that the Rambam is your professor, or that the Ravid is your professor, or the Shulchan Aruch is your professor, or the Magen Avraham is your professor, or the Vilna Gaon is your professor, once you've decided that and you've opened the sefer, or you're sitting in his shir and you're listening and you've decided I've come to learn from him, then there's no discrimination. Then it's shmias oizen. Use your ear, nothing else, not your brain. Just listen. The oizen, you remember, we learned this ka'afar chesis. It's like that funnel that takes in everything. It takes the rubbish in as well. The sorting out takes place later on. But don't try and sort out too early in the procedure, because you'll make a mess of it. You'll be sorting out before you even understand what he's saying. takes a lot of work to understand what your teacher is saying. And to do the sorting out before it comes into your ear, that much. So first absorb. Take it all in. Once you've been discriminating in your selection of teacher, and I must stress that, we're talking about indiscriminating in the acceptance of the knowledge, provided that there has been extreme discernment and discrimination in the choice of teacher. Provided there has been that, then there must be indiscriminate shmi'as ha'ozen. You just listen and you hear accurately what the teacher is saying or what the book has written. Accurately. And that's terribly, terribly difficult. So without prejudice and without preconceived ideas, without distortions and without bending and twisting, just to listen and hear accurately what has been said, that's sometimes one of the most difficult things that there is. And that's the second of the kinyoni here. After there's been Talmud, after you've made yourself into a Talmud and you found yourself a teacher, the next thing is open your ears. And use your ear to the exclusion of all other parts of your body at this stage. Later on you'll see all sorts of other things happening. Next comes Arichat Sfosai. Now you're learning. It's terribly important in your learning to learn out aloud. If you're in a shiur, it is important to participate, to ask questions, to use your mouth as well, not only your ears. But this is second stage already. Once you have heard, don't use your mouth before you've heard. That's tragic. When people ask questions before they've heard, I'm not saying when people ask questions before they understand, that's acceptable. But when people ask questions before they've heard, that's tragic. And you usually see in people's minds already, they're formulating their question while you're busy talking. They haven't even heard the end of what you're saying, and they can't possibly be hearing what you're saying because they're so busy deciding what they're going to ask. But there's no way they can hear what you're saying. And you know exactly what they're going to ask. It's the same question that anybody would ask if they heard the first quarter of what you're saying without hearing the rest of it. So the first thing has to be Shmi'as Ha'ozen, but once it's been Shmi'as Ha'ozen, there must be Alichas Fosayim. Express it by questioning, by discussion with a colleague. Two people who were at the same shiur get together afterwards, ask, answer, discuss. There should be talk. If one's reading, if one's learning something from a sefer, learn aloud. Don't learn soft. Always learn aloud. Every word. We're learning Torah, not secular material. Secular material, if you skip out a few words, it's nothing. In Torah, if you skip out a few words, it's serious. Each word is there for a reason, and each word has been put there after very careful thought and consideration. And each word needs to be read and understood and integrated clearly. However, there is the tendency that when one reads out, that one feels that one is progressing so much by the reading that one isn't learning with one's brain. And you read it over and over, you're sitting there with your Gemara and you can over and over and louder it comes and more fluently, and it's beautiful, and you can read and translate a whole duff of Gemara and you can do it in 15 minutes and you do it again and again and again, and you're practicing and practicing and coaching yourself and it's lovely, and you do it with the Rashi and you can read and translate all the Rashi and all the Tosfos and you feel, I've mastered it now. Then you go into the next page. We're given the fourth one known, Binas Alev. Every time you read, every time you revise, every time you talk it out, Bevinas Halev, it's got to be with application of the heart, with understanding of the heart. Bino, you remember, is the ability that Vilna Gaon defined, the ability to notice the little things and from those little things to be able to understand the deeper things as a result of that noticing. Says that the Reb Chaim Volozhiner, even if you'll continue to revise your information with your mouth, reading it aloud many times, revising your learning over and over again, it's no good to just get over it like a monkey. That's not how we learn. Even if it's your 100th time or your 200th time or your 300th time. And believe me, if you want to get to know Gemara, we're talking in the hundreds, not in the tens of times of revision. We're talking of hundreds and 200 and 300 of times to really get to know. But each time, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, has to be Bevinas Halev Kamei Befa'am Arishon, with that same intellectual application as there was the first time. Don't think, now I know it, I just have to revise it. There's no such thing. Each time you revise it, you start from scratch, as if you've never seen it before. And you start working out and applying your mind to it as if you've never seen it before. Word for word, phrase for phrase. asking questions and asking them, analyzing every single thing as you go. Not just running over it, running over it, running over it. That's not Chazorah. Chazorah is not just going through the mechanical acts of reading your material over and over again. Chazorah is to repeat the intellectual application that took place in the first stages of the learning. And of course, the kind of questions you're asking now are going to be different to the questions you asked the first time. Or sometimes they might be the same, but your answers will be different. And the third time, and the fourth time, and the fifth time again, that's Chazorah. Chazorah is not just over and over and over drumming it into your head. So you'll drum it into your head. What have you drummed into your head? A piece of information that you don't understand, or at best that you understand on the level that you learnt it the first time, or the second time, or the fifth time. So what's the point of that? If you've learnt it 100 times, why do you want to remember it the way you learnt it the first time, or the second time? If you've learnt it 100 times, you should already understand it on a much deeper level, and that's how you want to remember it. But that takes bina taleh. That takes tremendous application of intellect with each repetition. And that's hard. When you learn something the first time, as you know, it's hard enough to learn it with intellectual awareness and with analysis and with care. But when you've learnt it already 50 times, to do it again and again and again, that's difficult. And I've told some of you that I think one of the most important things that I learned from my Rosh Hashiva are not in any of the many shiurim that I heard from him. But it used to be those Saturday nights, maybe that's why I got into the habit of learning on Saturday night, that after Shabbos I used to go down to him, and he used to leave his home and we used to go to the shul. Shuls are places where unless it's Shabbos you'll never find anybody. Based on Medrash, Yeshiva, you'll find people on a Saturday night. In a shul you'll never find anybody on a Saturday night. Maybe that's one of the differences between a shul and a Beis HaMedrash. So I used to leave the yeshiva, and he used to leave his house, and we used to meet in the shul, where nobody would think of coming to disturb. And there we used to lock ourselves up from after Shabbos until 2 o'clock in the morning, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, preparing his weekly shiur. He used to give a daily shiur, and he used to give a weekly shiur. Now you must understand that the Masech that we were doing, he had done already before he became a Rosh Hashiva, he'd done tens of times. And since he became a Rosh Hashiva, he'd given Shiurim on it already tens of times, because every few years the cycle of Masechtas is repeated. And even in that particular cycle, before he gave his daily Shiur on it, he had probably gone over the Gemara 100 or 200 times. He then gave his daily Shiur. He then prepared his weekly Shiur on the same material. In preparing his weekly shiur, he probably went over it another 100 or 200 times. And then I used to turn up. And then he used to start. What does this word mean? What does this mean? What is that? It's a strange word. Why doesn't the mother use a word like this? You would have sworn that it was the first time he'd ever seen it. And the funny thing is, he used to discover things in that session that he'd never discovered in any of the previous hundreds of times he'd went to. And it was very difficult to know when he'd really discovered something new and when it was something that he'd known for years and years. But he went through the process of discovery each time again and again and again. And that perhaps was the most valuable thing of all. That each time you learn something, it can be simple. Each time you daven, it's the same davening we go over and over again. Every morning, parts of it are repeated the same in the morning and the evening. Ashrei we say 3 times a day. Shmona Esrei we say 3 times in 1 day. How much new can one find in it? The answer is, if you apply your intellect, you will find newness in it every single time. And if you say it like a parrot, you won't even find anything new in it the first time. That's how it is. Because although the material doesn't change, you change. And you grow. And you're able to see with greater depth. And the depth of the words is infinite. And as long as you'll apply your growth to the text, you'll find more in it. But there has to be bina taleh. If you're going to close your mind while you read, you'll read like a parrot and you'll remember like a parrot and you'll understand like a parrot. If you learn with bina taleh, you'll understand properly. And that means that Chazorah revision is slowed down tremendously. You can't revise 5 daf in a day. That's nonsense. Not possible. Not for us. The Vilna Gaon used to be able to do it. We can't do that kind of thing. Revise 1 daf in a day, you can't even do it. It's not possible. Like a monkey, yes, that you can do. A tape recorder can do it. But a human being is going to apply his intellect, can't do it. So instead of revising 5 daf in a day, it might take you 5 days to revise 1 daf. That's more like it. So instead of being able to revise the daf 10 times in the year, you might only manage to revise it 3 times in the year. But those 3 times of revision are going to be a lot more valuable than the 10 times of parrot revision that one's done. Because one's being koyanet Torah. One's using one of the kinyonim. One's using one of the 48 mechanisms of making the Torah yours. You're not using just some kind of secular mechanism. You're using an intrinsic Torah way. You're a Talmid, you're listening, you're using your mouth, and you're Binas Halev. In that case, with Chaim Velozna, so why do you have to speak it out loud? If you're using your intellect, is it that important to speak it out loud while you're revising? And there's a story in Masech Ta'irovin of Bruria, Rabbi Meir's wife, who was walking past the Beis HaMedrash, and she listened, and things were very quiet in there. And she walked inside, and she found the Talmud was learning, but she couldn't hear. He was learning softly to himself. And she gave him what for. She said, do you think you're going to become a Talmud talking like that? Without learning aloud? Okay, let's hear it. Come on, out with it. She made him learn aloud. And she brought Psukim to prove that that's the only way one remembers one's learning and one understands one's learning. And the Chaim Volozhiner tells us another secret here. And he says, even when you're applying your intellect to your revision, you still have to say it out loud. Sometimes when you make a mistake in your mind, you'll notice it when you hear. Very often you can make an intellectual mistake which sounds wrong, but if you've never heard it, you won't notice that it's wrong. Sometimes you don't notice that something's wrong until you hear it. And musical composers will often tell you this, that they're able to compose a piece of music and everything looks fine theoretically. When they're listening to it, it's noticed there's something wrong, but it's not correct. There are many things that until you hear it, you don't notice that there's a mistake. You don't notice that there's something which is inconsistent and something which is not right. And so it's necessary to talk it all out aloud. Your chidushim, everything you say, talk out aloud. If you don't have a chavrusa to, talk to yourself. And in talking to yourself, explain it to yourself as if you're explaining it to a child. Ki hapeh margish hapegimo. Because the mouth can notice the little mistakes, the little impurities. Uvahoytzi oy befiv. And as you bring it out in your mouth, yargish mokum hashgiyo. You will be able to pick up the place at which you've gone wrong, the place at which you've made a mistake. A very important thing, and always to remember, always out loud. Don't learn quietly, don't learn silently. Always out loud. That's the way you'll pick up anything that's wrong. That's the first little group of kinyonim. The next little group is the next three. Be'emo, be'yiro, be'anova. Be'emo is awe, be'yiro is fear, and be'anova is with modesty. There are different ways of learning this. We have to stop a moment to try and understand what the difference is between emo and yiro. Why does the Mishnah give us both these elements? She must learn with emo, awe, and yiro. The first way that we can take it is that emo is always a very good translation for emo. You're completely absorbed in the greatness of what you're studying. You stand in awe of what you're studying. And that's an important thing. That what you're studying has to be great. What you're learning has to be great. It has to be something that makes you stand in amazement at what it is that you're trying to absorb, at what it is that you're trying to understand. At the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam, at God's own Torah. And if that element of emo is not there, if you don't stand in wonderment and in worship virtually of this tremendous thing, there's again no way that you're going to be koyneh the Torah. You're not going to make it yours. You're not going to invest the effort and the time that it requires. Yiro is a consequence of emo. Now that I see how great it is, and I see how inadequate I am, how am I going to handle it correctly? It's the yiro, it's the fear of the consequence of dealing with something so great and something so magnificent. So we've got emo as the first, is awareness of the awe. Yiro is the consequence of that. Oh, so how am I going to handle it? And anova is the consequence of that again. Maybe the Rabbeinu Shalom will help me. On my own I can't. Without God's help I can't handle it. There's no way that a human being can understand the Torah without Siyata Dishmaya. There's no way that I can understand the Torah without God's guidance and God's help. It's too great and I'm too ordinary. It's not possible. And one needs those three elements. The greatness of the Torah, the fear of one's own inadequacy, and another, the understanding that one will succeed, but one will succeed through Siyata Dishmaya, not only through one's own efforts. The Tzitzis Yisrael learns that Emo is the relationship with one's Rebbe, and Yiro with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that one must stand in awe of one's Rebbe, otherwise one doesn't take seriously enough the words that one hears from him. Yiro is in awe of the Ribbono Shel Olam, another is in the feeling of one's own inadequacy. The Simcha is the next one. One must be careful that this Eimo and this Yiro and this Anova doesn't depress one, because you cannot progress intellectually in a state of depression. There's no way you can progress in Torah when you are depressed. You need to have Simcha. Chaim Voloshin says here, Ki haloi meid besimcha b'shor achas. A person who learns with Simcha for 1 hour, Yilmoid yoyser harbe, will learn a lot more. And what one would learn over several hours in depression. Right? So learning, the success of learning is not just the amount of time you spend on it. Chaim Volozhiner, who else is a better expert on the skills of learning than Chaim Volozhiner himself, a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, and he says that in 1 hour of learning besimcha, you will achieve more than in several hours of learning without simcha. It changes also the quantity of learning that one's able to achieve. So one has to have simcha in one's learning. One has to see that the Eimo, the Yiro, and the Anova doesn't lead one to anything but to simcha. And if those three are combined the way we describe, they will lead to simcha. That's the awe on the one hand, my own inadequacy on the other hand, and siyata dishmaya, God's help joining them up, then simcha results. It's not, oh, I can't handle it. You can handle it. You'll daven a bit, you'll be mispalil, you'll pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you'll try hard. The Torah was given to every Jew. There's no Jew who cannot handle the Torah unless he's mentally deficient. There's no normal Jewish person who cannot handle the Torah. As long as he uses these 48 methods, and none of them are beyond anybody, if he uses these 48 methods and is mispalel to the Ribbono Shel Olam for a bit of help, there is no Jew who cannot make it. Yogati v'loy motzasi al tamin. If a person says to you, I tried and I can't, al tamin, don't believe him, he's a liar. Either he's telling you a lie that he tries, or he's telling you a lie that he can't. But it's not possible for any Jew to try and learn using these 48 kinyonim and not to succeed. That can't be. And that should lead one to simcha. The knowledge that you can succeed, that you will succeed, that the Ribbono Shel Olam will help you to succeed, that brings one to simcha, to joy, rather than to any form of depression. And then we have tahara. Tahara is something that, I suppose even this applies to an extent to other forms of knowledge. Tahara means purity. One can take it very Kabbalistically to mean very spiritual purity, that one must see that one is not in any way contaminated and defiled with things that detract from what one's doing. But tahara means lack of defilement in every sense. It means lack of defilement in terms of distraction. If you're sitting down and learning and you have a dozen other things in your mind, there's a lack of tahara. Tahara is purity. And purity means the removal of anything which is not essential to the essence. Right, when you bring out this all the stuff from under the ground here in Loran in which the gold is found. Okay, there might be, I don't know what, 2% of it might be gold and the rest of it might be rubbish, and the 98% has to be removed. And it has to be removed totally until there is nothing left but the gold. And if there's anything there but gold, it's a lack of tahara, it's a lack of purity. If one's sitting and learning and one has in one's mind, one wants to learn, one wants to understand something, anything which is in one's mind at those moments other than the efforts to understand what one's learning is a lack of tahara. It's a lack of intellectual purity. And where there's not intellectual purity, there cannot be success in the learning. One has to purify one's mind totally and exclude any distractions whatever, so as to remain only dedicated at that time to the understanding of what one's learning. And emotional tahara too. At that time one has to be emotionally committed to the learning. One's desires must be controlled. One's cravings must be controlled. You can't sit and learn and crave for a piece of chocolate at the same time. It doesn't work. The one interferes with the other. If you need your piece of chocolate, better still to stop learning and go and get your chocolate than to sit and worry about it all the time. But best still is to kick it out. The best still is that while you're learning, nothing else comes in. There is no other desire but to understand and master what you're learning. And any other desire which creeps in underground while you're busy has to be thrown out completely until you finish. There is no space for it. And then one has to know also that in learning there's a tahara which exceeds, goes beyond even the moments of learning. There are two kinds of tahara. There's the tahara, the purity at the time of learning, and there is also the tahara in between the times of learning. You can't sort of learn during the daytime and go to a nightclub at night and then carry on learning the next day. It doesn't go. It's a lack of tahara. The effects of the one and the other, they clash. It doesn't get on together. There has to be tahara. There has to be unification of purpose, unification of intellect, unification of emotions. There has to be integrity. Things must tie together. One's life must tie together and one's life must be pure. This has to be something that dominates one's life. And one has to exclude from it anything which is an interference. No healthy activities interfere in one's learning. One can learn and one can eat. One can learn and one can sleep. One can learn and one can have a profession. One can learn and do anything which a normal healthy person does and needs to do. But there are certain things which do have to be excluded. There are certain things which are not compatible with learning. Some things are not compatible with learning at the time of learning, but they can be done at a separate time. If one has a profession or one has a business, there are times when one is involved in it. That doesn't necessarily detract from the times when one is learning, provided when you're learning, they're out of your mind. But there are some things that even in between your learning you can't do, because that will detract in its entirety, in your whole lifestyle, from the ability to learn and to study. And now we have another three, and I think these are the last three we're going to manage tonight. B'shimush chachomim, b'dikduk chaverim, and b'filpul atalmidim. We talk about three different kinds of people and three different kinds of activity. Shimush chachomim means literally serving wise people. Dikduk chaverim means meticulousness with colleagues. And filpul talmidim means pilpul is a difficult word to translate, but I think most of you know what pilpul means. Pilpul talmidim, asking and answering with talmidim, engaging in question and answer sessions with talmidim. Those three areas, the reason that these different words are used, with the chachomim, relatively little effort. The chachomim are those who are above you in Torah authority. The chaverim are your colleagues, those who are on your level. And the Talmidim are those who are below your level. With Chachomim, you need to apply very little intellectual analysis to what they're saying. You can accept it. Again, you've checked the three things, you know that they are authentic, you know that they have a reputation, and you know that they're Balei Midos, they're not going to cheat you and they're not going to lie to you. So, you can accept what's going to be wrong. They say something, you can know it's true, it's right. You like it, you don't like it, it fits in, it doesn't fit in, there are all sorts of things, but basically you know that it's right. All you've got to do there is to get to Shimush Chachomim. With Chachomim, it's not so much a question of analyzing what they're saying. What they're saying, you accept. But it's a question of Shimush Chachomim. All you have to do is you have to get personally close to them to understand them. Because in order to understand what they're teaching you, you need to understand them as people. Later on we'll come to it. If we decide to carry on with them towards the end of the Mishnah, we'll come to the same concept of why this is so critically important. But the Shimush Chachomim is basically getting to understand the person from whom you're learning in his entirety, not just one aspect of him. Because his Torah, the Torah that he's teaching you, is an expression of his whole lifestyle. And you need to understand his lifestyle and see his Torah in practice in his lifestyle to really understand it. So to understand the teaching of your teachers, what you need is not so much analysis of what they're saying as understanding of who they are. Once you understand who the man is, you'll understand what he's saying. But with Chaverim it's different. With Chaverim it's different. There you've got to listen carefully. There you've got to be critical with what you hear. Some of the things your colleagues tell you are good and some of the things are not so good. They don't have the same authority and they don't need to be accepted with the same indiscriminateness that we discussed in the case of the Rabbeim. Yeah, one has to go b'diktuk chaverim very carefully, analyze, listen very carefully. Diktuk is with meticulous care to note everything and to pick up any inconsistency, because there can be an inconsistency and one needs to pick it up and one needs to put one's finger on it. And when it comes to talmidim, it's pilpul talmidim, There it's more by the questions and answers. There it's not even Bikkur Kaverim, if the Talmidim are listening, you don't have to listen carefully to every word to try and figure out. There you're going to learn from your Talmidim by battling with them with questions and answers. They'll ask you something, and because of their way of seeing something, they'll touch on something maybe which you didn't think of. And you'll be forced to answer it, and that answer will give rise to another question and will stimulate a whole new line of thought. So the dynamics of the student-teacher relationship in terms of the discussion is what enriches the teacher's understanding. Don't forget, this is all talking about the individual acquiring Torah. So when it talks about Talmidim, it's talking about the teacher acquiring Torah through his relationship with Talmidim. And his acquisition of Torah through his relationship with Talmidim is through the questions they ask, more than anything else. So never should a Talmid think that he's wasting time by asking a question. Never should a Talmid think that he's a nuisance by asking a question. He's fulfilling his purpose more than anything else by asking a question. He's not giving the teacher anything. He's leaving the teacher just where he was when he started. He's merely taking, he's not giving. The way a Talmid gives is by questioning, by questioning, by questioning. How does that questioning go together with the Talmud which we learned, which is once you've chosen your Rebbe, you accept indiscriminately? So we talked once about that. There are two kinds of questioning. In English, the same word is used for both of them. Question means, I question what you say. What does that mean? I doubt what you say. That's really what it means. I doubt what you say. And there's a question. I have a question. These are two different things altogether. To question somebody on the basis of, I doubt what you say, I'm questioning you, that's not allowed. That's chutzpah. That shows that you either haven't chosen your teacher carefully enough, or having chosen your teacher carefully enough, you lack the modesty. But to question on the basis of, I need to understand what you say. Excuse me, but I didn't understand. It's my own ignorance, but can you explain to me? That kind of questioning, never is that taken amiss, and never is that out of place. When a question is asked in that way, no question is stupid, no question is ignorant, and no question is a waste of time. At worst, if a teacher feels that it's a waste of time in a shiur, he'll tell you to discuss it after the shiur. But in terms of your relationship with the teacher, the question is the most dynamic part of that relationship and something which is essential and vitally important. It has to take place, and it must always be encouraged.